This is Here and Now. Renowned travel writer Paul Theroux recently took to the road in a place that was pretty unfamiliar to him. Now, he does this kind of thing for a living, having traveled to far-flung Malawi, Uganda, and the tip of Argentina, among others. But this time, his subject wasn't a foreign country. It was the American South, a region Theroux calls an easy place to find, but hard to sort out, and it is full of paradoxes. Especially now, he says, 50 years after the Civil Rights summer of 1964. So Theroux traveled through a particular part of the South, its poorest, overlooked corners, or the submerged fifth, as he calls it. Paul Theroux's new article for Smithsonian Magazine about his journey is titled The Soul of the South, and he joins us from his home on Cape Cod in Massachusetts. Paul Theroux, welcome.
It's a pleasure to speak with you, Magda.
I wonder if I could just start with the most basic of questions. What inspired you to make this trip through a particular part of the American South?
A very easy question, really. The last long, difficult trip I took was in Angola. And when I was there, I was thinking how the problems in Angola of housing, medicine, infant mortality, access to education, roads, whatnot, might be reflected in our own lovely country, particularly in the South. Lots of people are in Africa trying to fix things. Fixing Africa is the mission of lots and lots of people. But you never hear about the South. And I hadn't traveled much there. And I was wondering how the rural South in particular might be faring.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about Virgin Johnson Jr., a man that you met early
yes.
on.
I was in Orangeburg, South Carolina, and met a man quite by chance, Virgin Johnson, who's an attorney. And then it turned out that he was a preacher, too, that he had a church.
He was what, the only black student in his school? And then in 1966, he wanted to get on the white school bus that drove by his house every day, but something happened.
Yeah, it was a period of what they called voluntary integration. You could integrate if you wanted to, but none of his friends wanted to. But he said to his father, I want to get on the white bus, the first bus. So he got on that bus. Father said, are you sure? They said, yeah. And he went, and he found that he was the odd man out. He found when he went down to the cafeteria, he'd sit down at a table to eat, and 30 boys would get up and leave. But he said it made him a fighter. It gave him strength. He was a very, very fair-minded person. And he, I must say, something you see in the South that's not mentioned is they have this sense, the sense of defeat isn't a feeling of weakness. It makes them understand what it's like to be down, both black and white.
Well, you know, the title of your piece is The Soul of the South. And of course, the soul of the South dwells in the people who live there. And in the case of Virgin Johnson, he still lives in the South, as you said. He's in Orangeburg, South Carolina, and he loves where he lives. But he tells you that something's missing today in 2014 from the place. What did he think was missing?
He wasn't sure, but opportunity, I suppose, is what he meant. But he said, people leave here and they shine. He wasn't sure what was missing. He's not the only person who loved living in the South. Most of the people I met were proud of their roots.
Now, Paul, if I may, I have to say that I'm sensitive to the fact that you and I are a pair of Northerners who are talking about the South. And what reaction did you get from people when you said you're from Massachusetts?
A wonderful reaction on the whole. Southerners are the most hospitable of people. And I don't see it as a foreign country. It's a region, but it's a region distinctly itself. I stuck to the rural areas. And rural America, with its deep roots, and I think great values, I said to a man in Aiken, South Carolina, I'm a stranger. He said, you're not a stranger. There ain't no strangers here. And a woman said the same thing to me in Tuscaloosa. I'm a stranger. She said, you're not a stranger. There are no strangers here. This is a great thing. And you wouldn't necessarily hear that in New England. When you travel in your own country, you're not the subject. The country is the subject.
There are a couple more places that you visited that I must ask you about. And one of them is Money, Mississippi, and specifically the country store where in 1955 Emmett Till is supposed to have whistled at a white woman while he was buying candy. And, of course, that led to his murder a few nights later. Describe what that place is like now for us.
Bryant's store, where Emmett Till met his doom, is still standing. It's on a crossroads. Money, Mississippi is a back road. There's a railway running through it. Train doesn't stop. The walls are crumbling. There are vines and roots and sort of holding it together. They don't know whether it's a monument, a horror. It's a haunted building. And Money, Mississippi, is a very tiny place. I mean, I doubt whether there's 24 people who live there. There is a church nearby, but it's set in the middle of nowhere. But it's a very, very important place.
Paul, if I may, I'm interested to hear you describe this as, yes, absolutely, it's an important place because one of the great and tragic events that sparked the civil rights movement happened there. And yet you said just a moment ago that they don't know what to do with the place.
No, what do you do with it? You know, what do you do with Dachau? What do you do with Auschwitz? Do you scrub them from the earth? Do you make them a monument, a memorial? Do you dignify them? But you don't get rid of them. I don't know what I'd do with it. The authorities in Mississippi have put up a sign. It's an indestructible sign describing what happened in the storage. It says Bryant's store, and it sits out in front. But the store itself, no one knows whether to rebuild it or tear it down, so it's just been left. Mm-hmm. But because it's been left, it's a particularly ghostly, skeletal memorial.
Well, there's one more moment in your journey, one of many that we didn't talk about, but that I do want to ask you. And that's when you have a somewhat initially awkward interaction when you are asking for directions to the B.B. King Museum.
Oh, yes. Yes, I was inquiring. I was in the Delta, in the town of Greenville in the Delta. And I must say the Delta is a very poor place, but poor in money, great in spirit. And I was asking about the B.B. King Museum. The woman's colleague said, "Shall we tell him?" She said, "I don't know. Tell Paul." Then the woman said, "This is B.B. King's ex-wife, his last wife, most recent wife." And so we talked about B.B. King, whose name is Riley. And I was kind of interested in, what did you call him? She said, "We called him B."
Well, you write about how B.B. King is the man, or one of the people, at least, who brought glory to the Delta and proved that it was possible. I'm wondering, as you finished up your travels through the South, what was the most profound and lasting impression that you had about this region? Because, I mean, in the subhead of your article, the magazine calls it an overlooked America. Is that the feeling that you had about the impoverished South, or did you come away with something different that surprised you?
It is an overlooked America, but I think it's an undervalued America. And maybe the South will rise again. I don't know. I hope it does. I hope economically it improves. I wish that the hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars that we sent to Namibia, Tanzania, Ghana, I wish some of that money was sent to the Delta. It would really help. No one does it, though. No one cares. It's taken for granted, is what I would say.
Right.
But one of the things about travel is that when you travel, you're going against stereotype. You're trying to find out that a stereotype is wrong. Mm-hmm. And I found that the stereotypes of the South to be wrong in almost every sense.
I can imagine all the Southerners hearing this say, yeah, and we've known that all along.
Yeah, they know.
And they would be right. Well, Paul Theroux's latest article is The Soul of the South. It appears in Smithsonian Magazine. His next novel, Mr. Bones, comes out in September. Paul, thank you so much for joining us and for sharing thoughts of your journeys with us.
Thanks, Begda. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Here and Now is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston in association with the BBC World Service. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. It's Here and Now.